So first of all, on Daf Yud Beis and Aleph, there is a very confusing sugya. It's very confusing what relevance per se it has lemaisa, because it's confusing what the Gemara means, and it's confusing whether or not it has any impact on practice. It does have a lot of reference, it has a lot of relevance to various lamdasha points. So it's a very often quoted Gemara, but again, its significance is a little bit hard to ascertain in a straight sense. In the Gemara here in the middle of Yud Beis Mod Aleph tells us, Pshita, Hecha dekanochit kasa dechamer biyadei v'kasavet deshechruhu. So let's say you have a cup of wine and you think it's beer. So therefore, you're going to make a shahakol instead of a bar peregafen. And you started and you made a bracha thinking it was a... And you're thinking you're going to make a shahakol. And if you end off with... realizing that it should be a bar peregafen, so clearly that's okay. In other words, the fact that you started off thinking you're going to make a shahakol and ended off with a bar peregafen, so the beginning is not going to hurt you. Because the ma'aseh, you could have ended off with a shahakol also. As the Gemara continued, say, "Nami amar shahakol nibidvaro yatsa." So therefore, if I could have made a shahakol the whole time, so if I, the fact that I started off thinking in my mind shahakol is not going to necessarily cause me any problems. But what about if it's the other way around? Right. So what if it, what if I'm picking up beer and I think it's wine? So I started off making a bar peregafen, and I end off with the shahakol. I hate when that happens as well. So there's a number of sfeikis about just what exactly is going on in this Gemara. First of all, it's a suffix how we hold. And you see there's two days in Tosus, and Rishonim have a whole debate about it. But it's also a question, what exactly are we talking about? Because there's also a shaila in Girsis, if you look at the Rush. And reading our Gemara, it sounds like we're talking about Machshavis, which would be a pretty big chumra. Right? It sounds like, in general, that if I pick up a cup of beer, and I made a shahakal on it, everything great. But it happened to be the first few seconds when I said the Shema Malchus, I was thinking by Priya Gafen, so that could in theory mess things up. Now that's a shaila if that's really what's going on here. Because some Rishonim have the girsa that it's not that I actually was just thinking that, but I actually said it. They really, what happened was I said bar peregafen, and then I realized, oh, it's supposed to be shahakol, so I said shahakol nibidvar. And then the question is, we have a kpeit of tochidei dibur, it has to be within whatever that shear is of tochidei dibur, somewhere between 3 to 9 seconds. And is that going to help? What if it takes longer? Do the words count? The words that I said in the middle, is that going to get my way? Is that a hefsik? Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva in which he explains against others that it's for sure not going to be a hefsek. Of course, Rishon already talked about this, that even though you're saying words in the middle of the bracha, basically, but they're words that are mayin habracha, they're words that have some kind of shayichus to the bracha. So even though some may have considered that to be a hefsek, but there is already indications in Rishonim that's not something that we're worrying about. Shlomo Zalman has a somewhat lengthy discussion about this in one of his tshuvas. So let's assume for a second that we're talking about just machshava, that this is something like you get the impression from Rashi and probably from Tosfos here that we're talking about having in mind the wrong bracha. So what if I have in mind the wrong bracha? So that's a question of kavanah. So do we even assume mitzvahs need kavanah to begin with? So why are we assuming that this is the bracha is a mitzvah? Is that the question? Why are you treating the bracha like a mitzvah? I hear the room to machalik map, but the Sfarim seem, the Rishonim already seem to assume straight that's basically the comparison is valid. I hear the room to say that the mitzvah is not bracha is not per se a mitzvah. That normally we talk about kavanah for a mitzvah, so we're talking about having kavanah to do an active mitzvah. And now here we're talking about having kavanah for what type of bracha I'm making. Why is that parallel necessarily? Necessarily 100%. I agree with your question, but this is already the attitude Rishonim are taking. And Tosfos already on Daf is taking this, and all the other Rishonim are bringing up this issue as well. So the question is, how does this impact on the issue of mitzvahs riches kavana? Right? Do we normally assume that mitzvahs need kavana? Or do we say mitzvahs don't need kavanah? This is an unresolved point of halacha because the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah has machlokus about this. And it's unclear how we paskin. There are different opinions we find in later Sfarim, some are machalic between the Raises and the Rabbanans, some are machalic between mitzvahs that have actions and mitzvahs that don't have actions. So some Sfarim suggest on this Gemara that that's the key, because since this is a bracha, it doesn't have an action, so therefore Kavanah is more of an issue. But there's another major point that's maybe implied in this Tosfos, and others say it more explicitly. And Rav Yosef Engel, if I'm not mistaken, in the Asra Deraisa has a whole essay about this Gemara here, about this point. What about the concept of negative Kavanah? That maybe when I say mitzvah ain't sriches Kavanah, if that's the opinion I'm going to take, so maybe that means if I have no Kavanah to be doing anything, so then the mitzvah is still good. But if I have Kavanah for something else, if I have Kavanah not to be making a mitzvah, so maybe that cancels out the Kavanah. Are those two equivalent points? No. There's a lot of distinctions you can make between these two sentences, which I'm going to try to spell out here. But basically, the question is like this. So first of all, do mitzvahs need Kavanah or not? If mitzvahs don't need Kavanah, does it matter if I have Kavanah against the mitzvah? So it could be that mitzvahs don't need Kavanah, and therefore it doesn't matter what I do, up or down, there's nothing I can do to change it. And some Rishonim have that opinion. The Ritva, for example, in Rosh Hashanah, the Sugi Mitzvah Sirichas Kavanah, the Ritva writes that Afilu Oymed V'Tzoyveich, even if I'm standing up and I'm screaming that I have no interest in the mitzvah, if we say mitzvah ain't Sirichas Kavanah, so the mitzvah is still good. Now, of course, as we know, that we're not necessarily assuming that we're dealing with people who are anti-religious and they're trying to bedavka not fulfill any mitzvahs. But there are very often reasons why you don't want to fulfill a mitzvah, either because you could fulfill a mitzvah in a more l'chachila way later, and if you're going to do it now, you'll do it a bit the other way, and you'd rather wait for the l'chachila way. For whatever issue, there are usually halachic reasons why it might be kedai to not be mekayim a mitzvah under a certain context. So the question is it possible to cancel out your kiyum ha-mitzvah? L'man da'amar mitzvah zayin sirichas kavanah, is that possible? So there are some who thought it was possible against the position of the Ritva and others. They thought that this is a raya, that basically what's going on here is, since I have kavanah for something else, and as David was indicating, one could say that's not necessarily the same thing. It's one thing to say I have kavanah not to fulfill a mitzvah, but I have kavanah to fulfill a mitzvah in a different form, in a different format, in a different slot, maybe that's not the same thing. But nonetheless, there are those who understood that that's what's going on here. That since I have kavanah for bari priyagafen, and that's as if I'm having kavanah not to make a shahakal. So basically, that's negative kavanah. Negative kavanah will knock out the fulfillment of the mitzvah. And of course, again, need to reiterate that the lumdus here is a little subtle, because there's a couple ways you could formulate this position. You could say that if you want to say that negative kavanah knocks out a mitzvah, you could say it's because yes, mitzvahs don't need kavanah, but negative kavanah is harmful. That's one way to formulate it. Or you could say the reason we don't need kavanah for a mitzvah is because stam mitzvahs are considered to be with kavanah. And this is based to some degree in a complicated sugi in the beginning of Zvachim, in the question of stam lishma, you know, that it could be that a mitzvah that's done in a normal way, even without any recognition that it's a mitzvah on the behalf of the actor, has its own inherent kavanah. And therefore, if I leave it alone, that's gonna act on its own. And this is a major principle in Lamdusha thought, and it's part of why the Noda Behuda in his tshuva, he was so opposed to the Shem Yichud. He says the idea of saying L'Shem Yichud, the way the Noda Behuda understood it, is it undermines the concept of Stam L'Shma. That now you're saying that, oh, this mitzvah is only l'shma because I said before l'shem yichud. But the fact is we're assuming that mitzvahs by themselves have stam l'shma. So therefore, it's not kedai to undermine that by saying, oh, because I have kavanah for this mitzvah, now it's intentional. And we normally assume that mitzvahs by themselves have kavanah. So if that's the case, so the idea of negative kavanah might be that you undermine, that you knock out the stam lishma. So a mitzvah left alone is lishma, but a mitzvah that you have kavanah not to do, so that knocks it out. So again, it's two different ways to understand the possibility that negative kavanah can cancel out a mitzvah. Hi.
Yeah, one problem with the lishma is that you're gonna maybe not have the right kavanah.
No. The problem is that the very statement.
Well, right. Why
explain. The very statement basically says that, oh, had I not said anything, this mitzvah would have not been lishma. Because why do I have to say L'shem Yizni Kishu?
Why does it hurt? Even if we
because
said
it implies that it was necessary. Again, you have to keep in mind, you have a little bit of a background here of a Hasidish Mishnagdish Machlokas, and if you want to know the historical background, it's actually within this tshuva, right? So the pasuk Poshim Yikashlubo, right? Zadeh Hashem Poshim Tzadikim Yelchubo Poshim Yikashlubo. That so it happens to be the Nod Behuda changed the pasuk in this tshuva, and he wrote that on this path Hasidim Yikashlubo, that the Hasidim trip over this path. And the publisher of the book, this is where Shechter relates, the publisher of the book was himself Hasidish. So he changed it back again, the potion. And the Noda Behuda said, okay, I took the potion, I made him into Hasidim, he took the Hasidim, he made him into potion. But, so there's a little bit of a, you know, a more sensitive topic beneath this whole discussion. But part of this context is that so the Hasidim had a practice of saying, L'shem Yichud Kishabrichu, before performing mitzvahs, and the Noda Behuda objected, saying that if I'm saying that if I have to say L'shem Yichud before a mitzvah, it's as if I don't say it, so then it's as if the mitzvah is not any good.
Is that the, they're saying that if you don't, that if you don't say
no,
it,
so that's the implication.
Yichud Kishabrichu means then you could be, it's like you're saying. Oh, that's what Blachman always said.
Okay, that's an additional element. But he's just saying there's the very need to say something is undermining the concept, the presumption of a need, or the implying that there is such a need, is then basically making the statement that when it's not there, it's not lishma, and we assume the mitzvahs by themselves are stamma lishma. So if that's the case, so then to say negative kavana is a problem, negative kavana works, so to speak, it's a problem, it's effective, is to say that it cancels out the stamma lishma. So again, if you say mitzvah shirchas kavana, it might just mean kavana is irrelevant. Right? There's nothing you can do with kavana. Or it might mean that negative kavana can be a problem because negative kavana is harmful, but other than that, kavana is not necessary. Or negative kavana is harmful because it cancels out the existing stamma lishma and you're left with nothing. So in other words, mitzvahs do need kavana. Really, mitzvahs do need kavana, but the kavana is there. And negative kavana really knocks it out. These were some of the many issues that come out of this discussion between what's going on here. So if you look at the Tosfos, so there is a very famous comment of Rabbi Akiva Eiger here, which I hope the word got around to take a look at. So it's not Rabbi Akiva Eiger, it was the Maharsha before him, and he quotes the Maharsha. Has to do with what's going on here in this Tosfos, Dibra Maskel Lo, that again, the Gemara leaves us a little bit without direction where we're going here. So Tosfos quotes, first he quotes Rav Alphas, he quotes the Rif, that since we don't really know what to do, so we assume Lakulu. And then Tosfos then resumes with the Ri to say that the Ri says it's Lachumra. And you have to make a new brach. So why should anyone assume that if it's a Bayit Lo Ifshita, that we're going to go L'chumra. Why don't we assume Sveika D'Rabbanan L'Kulo? Right, so that's the basic question. Right, don't we normally assume that brachas are mitzvah D'Rabbanan? It's not only that, but they impact on an iser, the araisa of Lo Sisa. So all the more so, we would normally assume it's Sveika D'Rabbanan L'Kulo, especially when it comes to bracha. So what is going on here? So there's a very often quoted statement of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. It's right here in the Bilyon Hashas. That's the real that's the most often quoted mucker for it. That here Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, and again he's quoting Marshalom Sachem, and the Evan Ozer makes the same point independently, that, and so basically these three achronim are associated with position, the Marshal, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and the Evan Ozer, that was, Deloy Shayach Kan Ela Bebirchas HaMitzvahs. That the idea of Sveika Sufik Brachas Lekuva is only true by a bracha for a mitzvah, the brachas ain't in the akvas. There the brachas don't really matter. Avo bebirchas hanenin aser lecho below bracha. But when it comes to a birchas hanenin, so we know the Gemara tells us that it's prohibited to eat without a bracha. Basically, it has some type of comparison to gzela, to me'ila, kila mal, as we discussed in the past few days, so without a bracha, you don't have the right to be nene from this world. So basically, on some level, it's a type of gzela. So therefore, you have an iser to eat. So it might say you have to eat. So lo hevi kan chshash bracha levatala. So therefore, we're not worried about a bracha levatala because you need the bracha to be matter the food. Dim lo yivarechei also lo lishtos, because if it's not going to make the bracha, it's going to be Usr. And then he says, and after this, I also saw this in the Ebenezer, that he says this independently without bringing the Marsha. Fine. So this is a groundbreaking Rabbi Akiva Eiger that definitely would severely affect the way we relate to the principle of Safek Brachas Lahakel. Right, that very often, perhaps this is a much more common example of Safek Brachas. Safek Brachas on food comes up more often than Berachas HaMitzvah, probably. And he's basically telling us that the principle of Lahakel is not applicable to such brachas. It does not seem to be that Poskim have endorsed this. It seems halacha l'maaseh that we assume Sveika Lakula, this is something that Reb Shlomo Zalman writes about in the Tshuva, that the Poskim have all rejected this idea. Reb Shlomo Zalman explains why that is, that basically the whole nature of this Isser is one that comes from the Chiyuv. And if you have the Safik of the Chiyuv, then you don't have the Isser. And if the Safik of the Chiyuv tells you it's Mutter, so then there's not going to be any Isser. And he compares it to an Onein. How can an Onein eat without making brachas? An Onein is part from Mitzvah Saseh, but is not part from Los Saseh. So therefore, if an Onein is not going to make brachas, so how is he able to eat? So you see from there that the Isser only comes from the Chiyuv, and if the Chiyuv isn't there, so therefore there's no Isser. Now you could say in a Hanami, it's actually a Shaila, not everyone necessarily was so convinced that an Onein shouldn't make brachas. And some have raised the possibility that maybe because of this very fact, then an Onein should make brachas, but Reb Shlomo Zalman doesn't assume that to be the case. And he says, basically you see from there that if there's no Isser, if there's no Chiyuv brachas, there's no Isser. So too, if I don't know that I'm chayiv in this specific bracha, or if I can apply Safik brachas lahakel, so therefore it's not like I have to think I'm risking an Isser of eating this particular food. Rav Vosner discusses this in a tshuva as well, and he has a similar approach, but slightly different. But he says that basically, again, this whole idea that it's like gzela is an idea of the Rabbanan. So you have this chiyuv of the Rabbanan telling you that you have an issue of gzela here. But as we alluded to earlier, when we're talking about brachas, the issue is not only sveika the Rabbanan lakula, but it's also that you're up against the nister daraisa, possibly, of Shem Hashem Lashav, even though there were Rishonim who believed that saying Shem HaShemayim in the Tzur Sabracha may only be a Nisr Darabanan. But let's assume it's a Nisr Daraisa. So if it's a Nisr Daraisa, so that's still going to be more of a concern than the Darabanan type of Gzela that's an issue here. So therefore, for those reasons, Vosner has his approach, and Shlomo Zalman has his approach, but these later poskim are pointing out that the attitude of Rabbi Akiva Eiger does not seem to have made it into practical halacha. Right? I don't think he's necessarily assuming that, but he's saying that basically, although it wouldn't be an impossible thing to say, but I think his basic point is that since you're faced with an Isser now, so I have to make the bracha to be mad to the Isser, otherwise. Right, so I think that's basically the approach that he's coming from. Stipler has a long discussion about this in his Sefer on brachas. It's kedai to take a look there. And he points out that Rabbi Akiva Eiger elsewhere explains his thinking in a slightly different way than most people take. Rabbi Akiva Eiger in his Aris in the Shulchan Aruch explains that basically the concern's like this. So if I am, either way I'm going to have a bracha levatala. Because the bracha levatala is going to be the bracha, in the case of the Gemara, the bracha levatala is going to be the bracha that I already made. So maybe how do I lose by making a new bracha when, okay, so now I'll have a bracha that's good, and the bracha that I already made levatala is the previous one. It's not like the new bracha is going to be levatala. Assuming, again, we're only dealing with the case in our Gemara and not any other cases of Safik brachas, which may not have the same scenario. So he does not find this to be so easily understood, because he would have thought that the more logical approach would have been that whatever happened has happened. Now the question is, now how do I deal with my situation right now? Now I have a Safik brachas, and one should go lukulu. It's interesting that the Pnei Yeshua over here has a different approach than one maybe we would have guessed. Because the Pnei Yeshua himself also seems to take the attitude that brachos might be deraisa, that he understood that idea of gzela as being a deraisa dikasvara because of the power of a svara to create dinim deraisa. That, you know, the Gemara sometimes says, lama likra svara hu, so why don't I need a pasuk? A svara is there already. So you could say, why do I need a pasuk? I need a pasuk to make it into a dinim Torah. So it seems from that powerful svaras have the authority like the Raisas, and therefore the svara of not being nana from this world without the asking Kadosh Baruch Hu's rishus first, so to speak, is such a powerful svara that it would have a status like the Raisa. So the Pnei Yehoshua himself could have understood the idea of going Safik L'chumra in this case in those legs. However, he happens to take a different approach that he explains in general the Chiddush and the Din of Sveikah Rabbanan L'kulu, which you find in some other sources as well, that we only say Sveikah Rabbanan L'kulu when to go L'chumra would be a big tircha or a hesed mammon. That if it's really going to be a schlep, so then we say it's a drabban or makel. But if you can very easily deal with it, and it's not going to take you a lot of time or money, so then we say it's fake a drabban or lachumra. So here, since you can just easily make the bracha again, so that's it's not a tircha, it's not a hesed mammon. So for that reason, that's why here we come out with fake a drabban or lachumra. Assuming like that position it tells us.
According to him, we'll have a bracha hamitzvah.
A Berachas HaMitzvah, it would seem would also be the case. Yeah, and it's hard to understand how that's really going to play out, but that's what it would seem like. I'm not sure about that also. It seems also to be a heavy element against it. And again, that's why the postgame did not seem to adopt this as a case. Hi.
The seven Berachas HaMitzvah is just a function of Safek Rabbanakul?
It's a function, really. We would have thought of a combination of Safek Rabbanam Lakula and the suffix of Losisa. Although you could say some Rishonim right. So some Rishonim understand that you're not really risking Losisa, but Tzuris HaBracha. But Tzuris HaBracha, at worst, it's going to be a Nisvah Drabbanan. So it could be that maybe that's the position that means that if you understand like that, then you're only really concerned with the issue of Sveikah Drabbanan Lakula. Okay. So again, there are a lot of interesting topics that swirl around this discussion of the Gemara, even though it's very questionable. There may not really be a Tzir from this Gemara that's directly Nogei Elamaisa, because it may be the whole thing is Lakula. And first we have to figure out what the case of the Gemara is talking about. That's a big debate. And then it could be that either way we're Lakula anyway. So it could be there isn't really any impact of the Sugya. But the side things that come around the Sugya, all these side comments that move around it, have had a big impact on a lot of different discussions. Dafi Beis and Mebeis, so we find the din of saying Hamelach HaKadosh during our Saras Samei Tshuva. It's an important thing to be aware of. If you want to take a look, Adir can give you from the Bar Ilan. So the Avnei Nezer has a long Populus Tshuva explaining Kedarka HaKadosh, what Kedarka HaKadosh, what is exactly the discussion here about L'chachila, B'dieved, and he has comparisons to other areas of Halacha. It's a little bit too Populus Tshuva in this context. But if you want to take a look, and Adir can give you from the Bar Ilan, you take a look at the Tshuvas Avnei Nezer and Aruch Chaim and Siman Tov Lamed. And moving on, so the Gemara talks about different things that they wanted to make a big deal about, Parshas Tzitzis and Parshas Bilam, and we were afraid to make a big deal out of certain sections of the Torah, Bipnei Tarumas Haminim, because people would say, oh, you see that only this part of the Torah is important, the other part of the Torah is not important. And therefore, it's a big shaila to make that we have, and the Tshuvas HaRambam talks about that when it comes to Aseres HaDibros, so even assuming people are sitting for Kriyas HaTorah, so when it comes to Aseres HaDibros, we ask the shul to stand up. So how is that not a violation of the concerns on this, we're here in Yud Beis and Yud Beis, that we don't want to single out the section of the Torah as looking like that's the most important? So if I remember correctly, I think in one of the early Masorah journals, the Rav had a discussion about this, how this minhag does seem to be really questionable in light of this significant concern. Even without the Gemara, you could have this concern that aren't you making the appearance that this is the only part of Torah that really counts? So I think the Rav suggested that the key element was that we have the different trup for the way we read the Aseres HaDibros. So that shows that we're doing it in a whole different context. That this is, and we discussed in the past how the Rav felt that the Kriyas HaTorah in general is an idea of recreating Har Sinai. So especially the Aseres HaDibros, we have a greater emphasis on doing that, and that's why we're all standing up. We're all standing up by Har Sinai. And the fact that we do it in different trup, that shows that we're doing something different here. So because we have the trop, that's why we're not concerned. If it was the same trop as everything else, so then that would look like it's just being matched of one parashah and Torah of another, and then there'd be a problem. But because we have this approach, that's what helps us. I think, the way the Rav was explaining, again, it's an issue in a minute. You have to put together different concerns, but that was what he cited as the helpful element.
Can you say that, Adarab, the fact that you do it in Tanayim?
proves that
all the more so is a greater concern. Except are those tamim any more important? Like they that way of nefashis? Well, we call it elyon.
Why is it called? I guess it's called elyon because it's more.
You know, so does that make so you think the trap itself should raise the issue? If you see the trap themselves as being something that indicates more chashivas, and you, the Rav is focusing on just that it distinguishes, it shows that this is a different context. Could be. Okay, so then as we get here towards the end of the parak, so we have the sugya of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the sugya of Kol HaKari LaAvram Avram. Kol HaKari LaAvraham Avram. See, my computer, when I type it on my computer, the Hayes sticks. So when I type Avram, it often comes out Avram. The good question is that the violation, is this where it's called HaKari LaAvraham Avram? So I'm going to mention that first before you see us Mitzrayim, because they are significantly disproportionate as far as how much we have to say about one or the other. So just to quickly discuss the last thing here about Kol HaKari LaAvraham Avram. So the many ha-mitzvahs do not talk about this. You don't find this at all in the Sfarim. It's a question, why not? Many suggest because it was only from before Matan Torah. And the basic principle is that a mitzvah that was given before Matan Torah has to be repeated at Sinai in order to count. And this was not repeated at Sinai. So it's a question whether or not this is really a mitzvah darus and whether or not my computer is violating anything by leaving it at the hay when it gets stuck. It's a shallow to see the Kedibur. But I think Maharal Diskin suggested that the Isser was calling him face to face, Avram. He went up to Avram Avinu and called him Avram. So that would be the problem. And again, that's for most of us not in the Gale Maisa. We discussed the past week's Yisurim of Dar Shal Mason, Shal Lov. In order to actually commit this Isser, you would probably have to violate other Yisurim. So we can assume it's probably not no gudorus. After his man Tchias Mason, maybe it will be again, and that'll be something for the poskim to figure out. Okay, but then the last sugi here, this is basically our sugi of the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yes.
So I actually looked at the Gilui Nishas because I when he's at the Kol Korila Avraham.
Right.
So. When he just puts it in the list of like a long thing of like rules for life, basically, and it has nothing to do with anything else that he says there, I thought that maybe that the reason why he puts it there is the stand that people should be medactic when they talk. It shouldn't be.
It's wrong to slur your words.
I think so, because like, otherwise, I don't know what it's doing. It's basically in the simon of that, how to behave properly. So.
I was about to say, okay, sounds good. But I'll say, all right, that sounds very good. Thank you. Actually, if you do want to see this quote of the halacha, I should just mention the Magen Avraham Mahalchus Maso Matan, the Simon Kufnu and Vav. Right, this is Simon Kufnu and Vav and Aruch Chaim. So there, it's a fascinating simon that the Aruch Chaim, that the Magen is definitely worth reading through. So the Magen Avraham goes through all of these things that don't get brought anywhere else, right? And he makes sure that you're aware of them. It's very useful simon. It's fascinating reading. A lot of very interesting things you'll see there. So one of the things he brings there is this din of Kol HaKari LaAvraham Avraham. So it is in Aruch Chaim. It's not in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's in the Magen Avraham. He quotes a lot of interesting things there. Hi.
I thought that this mitzvah would be no way after that's amazing, but that's still not be able, not the category of being written down.
I mean, the fact that it will eventually be negay again. So normally the Rambam does count mitzvahs that are negay to Beis HaMikdash. So is this the same? Is this different? Is Tchias HaMeisim the same? Same standard. Sorry.
That wasn't negay.
That wasn't negay. Will be negay though.
Right.
This mitzvah was never negay because by the time the Torah was given, it was already too late. Okay. Good point. So it's losing on both ends. Too. Torah's too late for it. Okay. In any event, so for our final discussion for these last few minutes, let's talk a little bit about Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the Gemara here tells us that there's an obligation to fulfill Yetzias Mitzrayim both at day and at night, so basically twice a day. As Menachas Chinuch discusses, there are some who understood the obligation of night being Derabbanan, really Minat Torah once a day would have been enough. And the Drabbanan we say at night, and our basic role, our basic way of fulfilling this mitzvah is through Kriya Shema. That's what the Rambam basically spells out in Halachas Kriya Shema and Parak Aleph Halacha Beis and Halacha Gimel. So it makes a fitting end to this parak as well, that since the third parasha of Kriya Shema is something that mentions the Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we're doing that during the morning and during the night, so we fulfill Yetzias Mitzrayim that way. There are other possibilities also. David Karliner in the Shuvah Shelos David suggests that the fact that we wear tefillin and we sit in the sukkah and we do certain mitzvahs that are evocative of Yetzias Mitzrayim in their formulation, that's also a fulfillment of Zechirat Yetzias Mitzrayim. And in fact, David Karliner writes that these are really the ikar fulfillments of Yetzias Mitzrayim. In general, if the question the Chasam Sofer has a discussion, if we assume that tefillin have this aspect of Zechi Yetzias Mitzrayim into them, so why don't we obligate women in wearing tefillin? Tefillin are the paradigmatic mitzvah seisha azman grama, but maybe we should say afen hayuboso hanes. So nice, and many Rishonim assume afen hayuboso hanes is only a svara for mitzvah d'rabbanan to begin with, but if you assume like those Rishonim say, it's a svara for a mitzvah d'oraisa as well, so why don't we obligate women in tefillin? This is something that Chasam Sofer has a tshuva bat, and I think Rav Moshe Soloveitchik is quoted as explaining that we only say afen by a mitzvah where the whole tafkid of the mitzvah is to evoke this experience. But if we have a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah by itself, but we are also told the mitzvah has this component of mentioning an ace, and it doesn't mean that that's a mitzvah for an ace that we would apply afen hayboso for an ace to, even if we would apply it to d'oraisa. Hi. Would that be a fulfillment? You have to hope so, according to Rav David Kohn, because if you assume you have to say it every day, you're not wearing tefillin on Shabbos, so you're going to need something in Shabbos to have that role, so maybe that's the word. Maybe it's Kiddush. But what confuses a lot of people, and what the Prima Gaudim in his Psicha takes up, is, so what exactly is going on with Pesach? So we know that Pesach night, so we have this major mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So what exactly is the difference? We have an obligation every day, and we have an obligation on Pesach. So what exactly distinguishes them? So there are a number of theories what it is. Some suggest, here the pre-Megadim and the pre-Chadash both suggest that really every day, it's not really a Chiyuv D'oraisa. That's really an asmachta to do it every day. And that the real mitzvah, Min HaTorah, is only on Pesach night. That's one possibility. The Chasam Sofer and his Tshuvas, and the pre-Megadim has this idea as well, suggests that in theory you could be Yotze during the year with Machshava, and on Pesach you have to actually say it out loud. Others expand on that idea by basically highlighting the dialogue aspect of Pesach night. At Pesach night you have the obligation to say it to somebody else, and every other night of the year it's enough just to say it to yourself. And sorry? Right. If you want to use those words to identify them, that works out very well. If we call Pesach night Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the daily one Zechir Yetzias Mitzrayim, so that very much highlights that aspect. Others suggest that you can be Yotze during the year by just mentioning it, but Pesach night, there's a chiyuv to be Meir, there's a chiyuv to really go into it at length.
That's how I'm Harish Mashiach.
Not, well, how much you're, the more you're Meirich, the better. But the basic fact, you're not supposed to, you're not Yotze by just saying, which is not necessarily Muslim to everybody, but the assumption here that maybe you're not Yotze by just saying, Yetzias Mitzrayim, and then going to sleep. But you have to at least explain something, you have to at least go into it a little bit, so that may be the distinction, assuming that you believe that. Hi?
Ron said that really the Iker view of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is just saying, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Those three words in
So that could be. If you hold like that, so then you're going to have for the weekday or for...
For the Saturday night.
So then you have to... That theory is going to play a role in a second. We'll see. If you hold like that, then you need a different explanation as to what the difference is. But as I said, that explains maybe a different point. So our practice is not to make a specific bracha on this mitzvah. It's a discussion, why not? So a lot of the answers relate back to this point. If you want to say that you can be Yotze even Pesach night with Hirur Kedibur, which we reject the Chasam Sofer's distinction. So some suggest, based on the Beis Yosef and by Bittul Chametz, that a mitzvah that's performed b'leiv doesn't have a bracha. If you want to say, each one of these answers has a parallel. If you want to say that the difference is that Pesach night, you have to actually say it to somebody else. So some suggest this may relate to the famous Tshuvas HaRashbah. The Tshuvas HaRashbah that says, you don't make a bracha on staka. Those who expire, you don't make a bracha on staka because maybe the guy won't accept it. You need to give it to somebody, maybe he won't take it. So too, if you need to have... Some have extrapolated that rush, but basically be saying that any mitzvah that involves somebody else that you can't do by yourself, there's no bracha on. So too, if there's a need for somebody else to be involved, so that's going to get in the way of you making a bracha. And others suggested, relevant to what Matt just said, that if you want to assume that you can be yotzei zechiras es Mitzrayim with very little, so again, to parallel the question of, is that the distinction? So then, you're going to get in trouble because you're going to say Baruch Asher Kesham Estav Sivanu Al Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, and then you're done because you already fulfilled the mitzvah in the bracha.
So even more than that, just in Kiddush, the mitzvah of the Kiddush.
Let's say you make the bracha before Kiddush. Let's say in theory we could have been attacking it that way, but then by the time you finish the bracha, you'll be yotzei.
Right.
So either way, you're kind of stuck. So that suggestion has also been offered. Nobody seemed to ask. If we assume that our Iker fulfillment is done, of the daily mitzvah is done in Kriya Shema, so what about the women who may not say Kriya Shema? They're not necessarily mechuyavis in Kriya Shema. So this is actually a shaila whether or not women are obligated in Zechir Shiyas Mitzrayim. That the Magen Avraham assumed that women are obligated in Zechir Shiyas Mitzrayim. And the Shagas Aryeh in Siman Mibayis has an essay about this in which he takes the stance that it's actually a mitzvah say Shazman Grama. So something the Achronim talk about, the Menachas Chinuch has a discussion about this, and other Achronim talk about this. So it's not 100% clear whether or not women are obligated in Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. So, it's just interesting to focus on. Sorry? Well, that's what the Shagas Aryeh used to make to say women are putt. But that is based on the Mitzvah Seish Shazman Grama.
But there are other factors, whether or not yes or not.
Well, if you don't say that, then you're probably going to tend to say yes. The reason the Shagas Aryeh patted is for that reason. Seems like it. That's what it seems to be. Because we have to figure out it on a level of Minhag Torah, is it tied down to a certain time? Well, is but can you fulfill Zechiras Mitzrayim in other ways? Shema is only our way of doing it. So now it should take the last few minutes to maybe look at this in the larger context of the mitzvahs of Zechira. So it's just interesting. So we have a number of mitzvahs which are Zechira oriented. It's actually a shaila how to count. If you look in your Sidurim, so you'll find six, right? The popular approach is that there are six Zechiras. That's not necessarily everyone's count. Some count four, some count more, some count less. Different times in the Torah that this idea of Zechira is brought up, it's taken with different levels of seriousness by different poskim. If you look in the Kedushas Levi, Rav Levi Yitzchak Abarditcher Sefer and Chumash, so he has a whole kontras on the Zechiras, but he has a whole different list. And he has Zechiras that we don't have, he has Zechiras Haman, and Zechiras Eretz Yisrael. And if you count everybody's together, you could get nine, you could get different numbers, but the most popular view is that you basically have six Zechiros. That's how it's commonly quoted. And the six Zechiras, let's make sure we have them all down, right? So they are Shabbos, Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Amalek, Maimed Har Sinai, and Miriam, and Chet Egel. I said that was Shabbos. That was it. Six. Right? Okay, so those six all have some idea in the Torah that we're supposed to remember them. And it's interesting to watch that they're all played out halachically in very different ways. And so as far as Yetzias Mitzrayim, that we just discussed. The other five all have completely different treatments in Halacha, and we'll discuss them in a second. Some Svarim suggest that this is an example of Masar HaKostav L'Chachamim, that we have a principle that comes out from the Gemara and Tosfos and Chagiga and Daf Yuches, that sometimes you have a concept, or the concept is Min HaTorah, and the rabbis had the Rishus to define how it would play out. But Masar HaKostav L'Chachamim, it's a Din Min HaTorah, but the Chachamim defined its Surah. So some Svarim suggest, some Achronim suggest that the Zechiris were like that also. That their principles Min HaTorah, but it was given over to Chazal to determine how they would be played out with Halacha. So Yetzias Mitzrayim we've just discussed. Amalek is probably another one of the most prominently observed types, and that's got its own host of issues. Let's see how quickly we can summarize some of the issues. So we normally fulfill Zechiras Amalek through the Kriyas Parsha Zachar, the week before Purim, Shabbos before Purim. And many like to point to the Rush in Brachas, the Rush in the seventh parak of Brachas, as believing that that's the Dimmon HaTorah, that to lane it from a Sefer Torah with a minion is a Dimmon HaTorah. It's a question whether or not even the Rush said that. A lot of Rishonim for sure didn't seem to hold like that. The Rambam, the Ramban, did not necessarily seem to assume that that aspect was Min HaTorah. The Torah doesn't tell us to lane. The Torah says that an obligation to remember Amalek, the idea that it has to be done by Kriyas HaTorah. And B'tzibur, so this is generally associated with this Rush. Some Achronim question if it's not really what, if it really is what the Rush meant. But in any case, if anywhere, it's basically coming from this Rush. There are a couple of Tosfos in which seem to sound like it also, like the Kriyas HaTorah of Amalek is Daraisa. Some suggest that the Ksov Zosu Karim B'Sefer, that's the idea that it has to be through a Sefer Torah, and that since fighting Amalek itself is a mitzvah Satzibur, so therefore remembering Amalek has to be done B'Tzibur. Different ways that they would like to suggest to explain how these components of Tzibur and Sefer Torah could be tied in with the mitzvah itself. But even if so, so the question is, so why should it be when it is? So maybe I only have to do this once in my lifetime, maybe I should do this every day. So there's a principle that's associated with the Chasam Sofer. The Maram Shik more explicitly quotes from the Chasam Sofer. It's a question, there are indications in the Shuvas Chasam Sofer that he himself may not have totally signed on to this idea. But the idea that's associated with the Chasam Sofer is the concept of a Shir Shikha. That after a certain amount of time, you start to forget. And that Shir Shikha is 12 months. And we have a couple of indications in Shas that that's the case, because the Gemara says by Avelus that Ames Mishnekech Menalev, after 12 months, the person who passed away begins to become forgotten after 12 months. And the second parak above Metzias, so we also find by lost property, so there's a din of Yeish. If the person gives up on getting it back, so the Gemara says, Menastam, you can assume Yeish took place after 12 months. So from these indications, you may come to the conclusion that there is an idea of 12 months being a Shir Shikha, and after a year passes, so we can assume they're going to forget. So therefore, the Torah tells us not to forget about a Malik, so we have to make sure once a year to have this mitzvah performed. So then there is a chumrah that they've suggested, and this is not explicitly in the Chasam Sofer's own writings, and there may be indications if I can, but based on the Chasam Sofer, and Maram Shik discusses this, that maybe in a leap year, maybe you're in trouble, because in a leap year, there's an extra month there stuck right before others, and they're going to have 13 months in between the two Kriyas, so maybe that's a problem. So that's why they tell you, well then in the summer, when they read in the summer, you should have Kavanah to be Yotzei then. And it's a question whether or not this is really necessarily a compelling chumrah. But Willick suggested that when we say 12 months, we don't mean exactly 12 months. I mean the cycle of a year, when a year passes, so then we move on, you know, things shift. So if a year is 13 months in this case, it's not really substantially different. But besides that, many have questioned the whole concept of Shir Shikha, whether or not either of these rayas are compelling. The Sat Merav is a truth about this in the Divrei Yoel. Then on the one hand, the Raya from Avelis is a little difficult because there you spent a year trying to get over it. You're trying to forget it. So it doesn't mean if the Torah tells you, Davka, to remember that you're going to forget after a year. Maybe only a case where you spent a year mourning to get over it. It starts to work after a year. Doesn't mean that Mamela things disappear after a year. And the Raya from Yeish is also questionable, which means after a year people give up hope of getting it back. Doesn't necessarily mean that people forgot about their property. It means that they think, oh, okay, if I haven't seen it in a year, I'm probably not getting it back. Doesn't necessarily mean that they forgot it existed.
What about the last part? I brought this up. You don't see friends where you can say a chef, you know, it's like someone's interesting with you. So.
Because that means that you forgot they existed? Right, it would be hard to hold it up as a proof that there was a forgetting. Okay, maybe. We'll take it as a smile. In any case, so it's questionable from that angle whether or not the Shir Shikha exists. So rather they suggest that like the Magen Avraham seems to imply that basically Chazal knew there's a thematic link between Amalek and Purim, and they wanted before Purim that we would have this mitzvah fulfilled then. So they said that we should do this mitzvah d'oraisa of Amalek in the Shabbos right before Purim. And then there are various other questions that come up, and the question of Nashim is also present there. It's a big debate in Achronim Ad Yom Hazeh whether or not women are a pater or chayev in, or chayavos in a malik, and it's a question why they shouldn't be. It's difficult here to say mitzvah seisha as man grama based on the discussion we just had, because it does not seem like min ha-Torah there's a set time for when this mitzvah should be performed. So why that should be, why it should be that is difficult. It sounds like from the chinuch and the milchas chinuch, like the issue is one of mochama. This is a mitzvah of extension of the mitzvah of fighting a malik, and since women don't go to war, so therefore women aren't obligated to chiras a malik either. And Achareinim had a hard time with this because a malik is a mechamas mitzvah. The Mishnah says in Sota mechamas mitzvah even kalam michupasa. It sounds like the women are going out. So it's a big debate back and forth. What exactly is the status of women and the obligation of Zachar? There's a lot to say about it. There's no bracha on Zachar either. Many Achronim suggest that's because it involves war, and we don't want to celebrate that fact. That just like we don't say full halal on the last days of Pesach because people were dying, so too, if it's about fighting a malik, so that's not a happy thing that we want to celebrate with a bracha. And there are other theories also, but whatever it is, there are a number of issues around this performance of a malik. One parallel thing between Yetzias Mitzrayim and a malik also is that there's a big debate in Poskim, Magen Avram, the Mishnah Berurah, the whole story about if you can be Yotzei Amalek with the Parsha of Purim. Do you have to Davka read that Parsha that says, remember Amalek, or does it have to be, or just talking about the Parsha of Amalek that we read in the laning on Purim, is that enough? You have a slightly similar debate when it comes to Tzias Mitzrayim. The Chasam Sofer has a shuv about the question of whether or not you can fulfill Zechir Tzias Mitzrayim with the Parsha of Shiras Hayam. That we connect Shiras Hayam to Yetzias Mitzrayim, maybe that only means that it's an extension of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But if I mention Shiras Hayam without Yetzias Mitzrayim, so can I fulfill Zechiras Mitzrayim that way? That was also a question in Pesach. Okay, so Yetzias Mitzrayim, we see, has one way of being approached, and Amalek has a completely different way of being approached. It doesn't really seem to have any overlap. And then there's Shabbos. You have the mitzvah to remember Shabbos. That has its completely own formulation. The most prominent fulfillment of the mitzvah of remembering Shabbos is Kiddush. Right? That's what the Gemara in the last parak of Pesachim understands. Zachar Shema Shabbos Zachreu Al Hayayin. Kiddush on a cup of wine. It's Machlokas Rishonim whether or not the wine is part of the mitzvah Minatar. It could be that Kiddush is Minatar. Kiddush seems to be Minatar according to everybody, but it could just be that just saying Kiddush may be a fulfillment on the level of Minatar. Some discussion in Poskim, maybe even Machshava of Pashas, you have to say something. And whether or not the wine is part of the mitzvah minat Torah or not, that's a debate in Rishonim. There's machlokus between the fake Rashi and Nazir and Daf Gimel Beis and Tadal and Menalos. The sugya there, so the Rashi and there is not real Rashi, but the Mefarish, whoever it is, Rashi's handwriting. So there's a machlokus between that and the Tosus over there and the Rambam and the Shulchan Rashi. But it's a whole question whether or not that is the minat Torah. But Kiddush itself seems to be the prime fulfillment of remembering Shabbos. And then Poskim can mention other things also, as Ramban writes in Chumash, that when you go shopping and you say, I'm buying this for Shabbos, that's also a fulfillment. Or every day when you say Shir Shal Yom, and you say Hayom Yom Revi V'Shabbos, so that is again mentioning Shabbos. So all of that are other fulfillments of Zechiras HaShabbos, but it seems to be that Kiddush is the primary one.
Is there anything to those, or can you just think about it? So
the Shagasari has discussion about that in general. Do we assume that Hirhur Kedibur is enough by these things, or do we assume? So when it comes to a malik, it's pretty. The Gemara says Beferish. Somewhere has a drush from Psukim in the Megillah that it has to be out loud. And when it comes to Yetzias Mitzrayim, so we saw that there's some who might consider Hirhur viable, and the Shagasari treats them all as one. And Shnerbach has an essay about this also, and he assumes that for sure you have to say them all out loud. Why that might be, actually, let's talk about that in a second. But so, what about the other three? So, Maimon Har Sinai. It's a question: what happened to that? So, some suggest that the fact that we have Chag HaShavuos, which is all to commemorate the giving of the Torah, so that has an effect on that level. And then the question becomes, what happened to Miriam and Egel Hazav? So that some of the Nosa Kalim suggest that when these mitzvahs were given, so we didn't have Chris Tar at all, but even in this modern Gemara, so we didn't have the yearly going through the whole Chumash. It used to take 3 years to go through the whole Chumash. But now, Vizmanenu, so we go through the whole Chumash every year. So it could be that really any zechira we would fulfill in the normal course of laning. So we didn't really have to do anything else besides that. And so therefore, when it comes to Miriam and Iglazav, they're both about Averis. So we don't want to go out of our way to make a big deal about that. We don't want to go out of our way to emphasize that because it's a gnai for Klal Yisrael. Although the Ramban, certainly when it comes to Miriam, the Ramban writes in Chumash and in his commentary on the Ramban, both in his Perush and Chumash and in his Sefer HaMitzvah's commentary, that this should be really one of the 613 mitzvahs. As remembering Miriam is a real mitzvah in the Torah, he said the Rambam forgot, doesn't know why. It's always a strange credibility a little bit to believe the Rambam forgot these mitzvahs, that's why he leaves them out. You know, Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael. Set the printer ready, whatever. You know, it's hard to imagine, but that's how the Ramban writes, right? Mitzvah says Shoshachach, Rambam, Rambam forgot to put in. That's especially ironic when the mitzvah is a Zechira, but apparently the Rambam forgot in the Ramban's understanding to put in the mitzvah of remembering Miriam, and you shouldn't forget because it's a real mitzvah. And he says it's in Chumash also. There is an interesting theory that a number of Sfarim have. The Malbim has this in his Sefer on Halacha. It's a very short Sefer by the Malbim Arzis HaChaim, the very beginning of our HaChaim. It doesn't get so far. The whole story behind that, but I don't know why it doesn't get so far. But in any case, a small Sefer that we have from the Malbim and Halacha, so the question is raised that if we had gotten just a little bit further, so in the beginning of the next parak, so there is a discussion in Rishonim, some Rishonim seem to suggest that Parshas Parah is also Daraisa. So how is Parshas Parah Daraisa? And some suggest that it's a typo. That really only Amalek is Daraisa, and that some places it says Pei, which was meant to be read Parshas Purim. Some reference to Amalek, but it was copied over as Parshas Parah. B'Shachta doesn't think it's credible to believe that this is a typo. He says there's too many Rishonim who say this and they're not copying from each other. This seems to be a strong view in Rishonim that Parshas Parah might be deraisa. How did Parshas Parah become deraisa? So there are different theories out there. The Meshech Chachma suggests a theory in Parshas Chukas. But what we have from the Malbim and from others is that we know the Chazal tell us that the symbolism of the relationship between Parah Aduma and Egel Hazav is that the mother should come and clean up after the mess the child made. That Egel Hazav represents the chait of Klal Yisrael, and Parah Aduma is the kapara. So when we're told to remember the Egel Hazav, so why are we told to remember this? Maybe you could say we're told to remember it because not of the Avera, but to remember the power of Tshuva. And therefore, better to focus on the Tshuva than on the Avera, so better to focus on Parah. So we fulfill remembering the Egel Hazav through reading Parshas Parah Aduma. And the idea that that's the Daraisa is because it's the fulfillment of this mitzvah of remembering the Egel. That's how some suggest. So in any case, so we have all of these Zechiras, and they're all treated very differently the Halacha, and it could be because there is this idea of Masra Kasav L'Chachamim, somehow Chazal were given over to define how it is. And if I could just take a few more minutes to finish up, so maybe we'll see a little bit Alpi Derech HaDrush to close off on some words of Drush, how these mitzvahs play a role. So of course you could ask, what's going on here exactly, that these six mitzvahs are singled out over everything else? Pashtus, we assume that the mitzvah to remember the whole Torah, and that is certainly recommended. And the Torah does also say there's an issue of forgetting the Torah. So what's going on with these six? Why are these singled out? So Pashtus, we mean something more. We mean that these mitzvahs have some type of significance that has to be kept in mind constantly, that somehow these mitzvahs require constant focus. And the question is why? So what's so significant about these six mitzvahs? So one could suggest that these six mitzvahs together form a philosophical plan for the whole world. That if you want to have a philosophy of Judaism, so there are a couple of stages. So first you have to know that God created the world. That's step one, that the world didn't just come in by accident, and that it was created intentionally by a higher being. So Zechiras Shabbos, we know Shabbos, the whole function of that is to acknowledge creation and to testify to that. Many riots for that we don't have to go into now. So therefore, that's the function of Zechiras Shabbos, that to keep in mind that there was always in our consciousness that the world is not random, the world didn't come here by accident, but the world was created by the Ribono Shel Olam on purpose. So then you might say, All right, but maybe God created the world and he doesn't really care anymore. He's not really involved. He doesn't have any active concern about what's going on with us. He's not guiding us at all. So that's why we're told that, no, we have to also remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. We have to also remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is actively guiding our fate, and he's turning history upside down, and he's taking things by the hand and leading them. So the second you saw it, just remember that not only that God created the world, but that he continues to be actively involved in being Mashiach over it. And therefore, we're told to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, which has that element to it. So then you might say, okay, so fine. So there's a God who created the world, and he continues to run it, but what does he care what we do? He doesn't have any responsibilities on us. It's not going to make a difference. Ma'enosh kisis kirenu, he's not going to care what the human beings do. So therefore, we're told to remember Ma'amid Har Sinai. We're told to remember that there were commandments given to us, that there are expectations that are made, and that the human being has a role in this whole story as well, and that we have responsibilities to live up to. But then you might say that if that's the case, so then fine, so there's a God who created the world, told us what to do, so then the only way it's ever going to work is if we're totally perfect in following that path. And if we ever deviate from that path, so then there's no return, then the whole thing is broken. So we're told also to remember the Egel Hazav, and especially if you say through the Paraduma, through the Tshuva, through the return, that even if we messed up, so it's still possible to come back. So four basic Yesodas, that there is a God who created the world, who continues to care about it, who will watch over us, who has expectations of us, but is ready to welcome us back if we deviate, that we return. So what about the other two? What about Amalek and Miriam? So Amalek and Miriam, one could suggest, are really two halves of the same coin. And they also form a very important structure. That the message of Amalek could be that when you go out into the world and you get more and more involved in learning, whether it's Torah, whether it's other things, whatever it is, so you become more and more cognizant of distinctions and of nuance. And it's what Rashi says in Tainus, in the beginning of Tainus, the Gemara says that Talmud Chacham who gets angry, Hai Talmud Chacham derasach araisach dekarischav. Talmud Chacham gets angry, so it's the Torah that's making him mad. So what does that mean? The Torah is making him mad? It means he's grumpy because he stayed up late at night and he's all annoyed today. So Rashi explains that it means that the more you learn, so the more you have harchavas adas, the more your mind is open to different things, and the more you notice, the more it's going to upset you, the more you're going to see things that are going to annoy you. And the Gemara says, so even so, we still ask him to calm down, but the instinct is gonna be there. So in general, this is the yesod in education. The more you realize about things, you're going to see more nuances. So you blur your picture of good and bad. So it used to be there's black and white, there's good and bad. But the more you see, so you see that not everything is all one or the other, that good has a lot of bad mixed in and bad has a lot of good mixed in. So you might say, so there isn't anything that's really so bad or really so good. Everything in the world is a taruvus of good and bad. And there is no judgment to be made about anything. So the Torah tells you have to wipe out Amalek, that you have to remember that there are things in this world that are completely bad. And that has to represent one aspect of the spectrum. And that has to be... it can't be fixed, it has to be destroyed, it has to be wiped out. And then you can maybe suggest that maybe that's why Chazal, if you want to assume Masra Kasav Chachamim, so why did Chazal Dabke say this mitzvah should be done with Sefer Torah B'tzibur? Because these are two things which very often can turn good and can turn bad into good. Right? The Torah has the ability to flip things around. Ha'or Shabbo Machzor Mutav, and also the Zechus of the Tzibur, as we've been discussing in some of the Shirim in the past, the Zechus of the Tzibur has the ability to cancel out the flaws of the Yachid. So these are two things which are normally able to salvage the good out of the bad and to turn the bad into good. So maybe the message here is that nonetheless, even with the Sefer Torah and even in the Tzibur, there are still some things which represent bad, and that has to be cut off. So Malik represent that which is so bad that the good that may be mixed in is not going to make a difference. It's still defined as bad. So what does Miriam have to do with that? So Miriam is the opposite. The Avera of Miriam is Lashon Hara. And you're supposed to remember Lashon Hara. And Lashon Hara is grouped together with Dibas Aris, the Chet of the Meraglim and the Miriam put together. That speaking badly about another Jew and speaking badly about Eretz Yisrael, those are prohibited under the names of Lashon Hara and Dibas Aris. And both of these Yisurim, you could ask, well, what's so terrible? If I'm saying something true, by definition, Lashon Hara is true. If I'm saying something that's factual, so why is that wrong? Why am I not allowed to say what's true? And if I'm complaining about Eretz Yisrael, if I have some real complaints, so why am I not allowed to talk about them? So one could suggest that the answer is that in a chanami the facts that you're saying are true. But if somebody really has a proper hakara of what the godless is of another Jew, so then these little things that are annoying him are not going to make the radar screen. They're not going to be significant. And if after all is said and done, you're still left talking about these things, so the basic lack of hakara of what the Jew represents. And Tibbos HaAretz is the same, that if you're going to complain about whatever it is you're complaining about, then that's the Eretz Yisrael in the larger context of what it represents. So that's again a basic failure to recognize what greatness is. So therefore, Miriam represents the opposite of Amalek. Amalek represents that which is so bad that the good mixed in doesn't make a difference. And Miriam represents that which is so good that the bad mixed in doesn't matter. So whatever else goes on in life, so we have to keep both these poles in mind. On the one hand, there is the pole of bad, which represents bad and has to be avoided, and good, which represents so good that we can't let whatever bad is mixed in interfere with that. And having these spectrums of good and bad on either side puts all of this other stuff into context as well. So basically, we're left with 60 sodas. God created the world. He continues to care about it. He gives mitzvahs to all of us and responsibilities to us, and yet he's willing to welcome us back if we stray from these, and that we have to see all of that within a scale of good and bad, and to know how different aspects and different elements will fall into play. And all of that is a lifetime concept, and therefore we're told about these six things. Remember these all the time, not like the rest of the Torah, which we have to also know about, we're not allowed to forget about, but we're not just talking about knowing that if somebody asks you, Is it mutter to eat basar b'chalav? You'll say, hold on, otaka, no, it's not. You'll remember, you'll access the file. But these six ideas are ideas that have to be permanently on your mind and your consciousness, and remember that that's what you're dealing with as you go through life. I really just want to say that, sorry for going a little over time, but it's really been a tremendous, tremendous pleasure and covet to be with you for the summer. And I thank you all very much for your participation.